Good Monday, everybody. Welcome into the Rundown here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are streaming live on thegamenashville.com and the Game Nashville app. How's it going? Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson, who is at our Wholesale Inc. studio powered by RumbleOn.com. Ryan, good morning. What's up?
How we doing, Chaser?
You know what? I woke up with some energy this morning.
Good.
A little pep in my step, feeling good.
So did Maverick.
Yeah, well, that's good. Hi, Maverick.
Yeah, he's in timeout. He's in the sin bin, so we won't be hearing from him today.
What, 5-minute major for being annoying?
You just hit the nail on the head.
That happens. For those of you that don't know, Maverick is Ryan's cat, and because we are working from home, we have to deal with our pets. Willie Donick has Stanley, who, look, he's done enough to get a promo. Sawyer, my dog, I mean, he barks a lot and sometimes gets involved, and look, that's how it works sometimes. But
well, you know, I have to hook up the equipment to the router, and the router is in the family room, so it's not like I can sit in the office and do the show from home. So I have to be out in the open. And Maverick, you know, if he doesn't love his wet food that he eats every morning, he loves cords. So he tries to get at the cords every day. And this morning, after I set up at about 8:30, he was really interested in all the cords, and after about 5 minutes, I said, enough of this. He's going to the sin bin.
Well, there you go. So Ryan has put him in the sin bin, and that's how we start the show. A couple of news and notes. The American Hockey League, of course, for those of you that are the novice hockey fans, the AHL, that's the minor league. The Milwaukee Admirals, that's the minor league affiliate for the Nashville Predators. Ryan, unfortunately, the American League has officially canceled its season.
Well, that's not necessarily a surprise, and I'll be very curious to see how any minor league team or league handles this situation, particularly in baseball as well. You know, what's going to happen with minor league baseball this season? Everyone talks about major league baseball and what they're trying to do perhaps in late June or early July to get their season started. But will they be starting their season with the minor leagues starting as well, or will the majors have a 40-man roster and just stick with that for the duration of their shortened season?
I don't think they can.
What, Major League Baseball?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to have more than just a 40-man roster, don't you? I mean, don't you think that you need to have each team basically needs to have a minor league team that is essentially with them, and then you can potentially have minor league games at the same locations?
Well, I mean, maybe, but maybe you have to have minor league players basically going through an extended spring training and just being ready to go instead of having official minor league baseball games. Maybe it's more of, you know, spring training-like games between different minor league teams. So whatever the case, you know, the domino effect of sports – being in their current situation, the domino effect now hitting the minor leagues in hockey with the American Hockey League. And, you know, I know minor league baseball is losing teams as a whole. It's gone from like 165 to 125. So the effect of this has been pretty paramount on sports.
Yes, it has. And we're going to discuss that a lot more today because there are opinions out there and maybe some news items, so we'll get to that. But as we do every Monday, Ryan, we have to react to The Last Dance. Episodes 7 and 8 aired last night. Now, I had to watch on it on a delay. I got held up, so I couldn't start right at 8 o'clock. I was very upset about that. But because of technology and DVRs, I was good, able to watch it. So except for the first – for episode 7, I didn't realize it, but I recorded the censored version, so I was mad at myself.
Ah, boo.
I needed my F-bombs. But but anyway, watch both episodes and just I continue to be impressed by this whole thing. Unfortunately, the finale is next week. But what were some things that I was looking forward to the most? The Steve Kerr fight, because I've always wanted to know more about that. And, you know, I thought that was cool that you had both sides and they were able to discuss it. And even Phil Jackson gave his point of view on it. But what were some things that really stood out to you?
Well, the biggest thing that stuck out to me was how close Michael Jordan was to actually sticking with baseball.
Yeah.
And the fact that he hit 202 with 50 RBI with the Birmingham Barons, you know, Terry Francona, who was the manager at the time, was praising MJ for hitting 202. And by all accounts within that documentary, if Michael Jordan had maybe another season within minor league baseball, he probably would have been in the major leagues. And, you know, we were both very young at that time, Chase. So, you know, when I've looked back on that huge news bulletin of him retiring from the NBA and going to baseball, you know, part of me felt like maybe it's a, you know, publicity stunt. Maybe he's just trying to fulfill another dream of his, but he wasn't all that serious about it, but he actually absolutely was. And, you know, director Jason Ayer on Go Look and Wingo this morning said he was 1,000% convinced that if there wasn't the strike in baseball, that Michael Jordan was going to stick with baseball for the rest of his athletic career.
Yeah, and we had Kurt Bloom on with us the last week on Darren Donick and Chase. He's the Hall of Fame play-by-play for the Birmingham Barons, and he even said that mm-hmm. I think if the strike hadn't happened, MJ probably – it. Just think about how much that would change in the history. I was listening to Golic and Wingo earlier, and I think it was Gojo that pointed out, I mean, he'd have the same amount of championships as LeBron. Kobe would have had more. I mean, just think about that. How much that changed history, or could have changed history, had the strike not happened and Michael remained in baseball. Now, who's to say he doesn't get called up to the majors, absolutely flop, and then go back to basketball? But we'll never know.
But at that point, he would have been further down the road with that, quote, baseball body that they were talking about last night. And he would have been older. So
you saw the difference. I mean, you could, in that short amount of time that they had to tell that part of the story, you could see the difference, though. And, you know, the mm-hmm. The Magic player saying, well, 45 doesn't look like 23. And mm-hmm. and it was true. It was he wasn't back yet. He wasn't in shape. And he even admitted that.
But he still had some great results. I mean, he dropped 55 at the Garden.
Sure. He did, but it wasn't MJ consistent.
Sure, and the endurance. Like, it was obvious to everybody that he wore down against the Magic in that playoff series.
What I want to know more about is the Jordan Dome, as they call it, when he was filming Space Jam, and he had that practice court where he was working out and doing drills and having pickup games with different NBA players. I would love just, maybe like an ESPN E60 piece on that, just how many pickup games were there. And you know, he even discussed it of the using it as like a scouting session to scout some of the younger players that he didn't know much about. But you know, Dennis Rodman was there, so I'm wondering if that's kind of how that happened, because Dennis Rodman signed with the Bulls that year. But that was kind of fun. That was fun to see that.
Absolutely. Just a lot of different details within this Last Dance, as we've been talking about every Monday, that we never knew about throughout this entire journey, either because we weren't born yet or we were too young to understand what was going on, even in the 97-98 Last Dance season. And I can't wait for next week when episodes 9 and 10, you know how they've been jumping back and forth between,
yeah,
I guess, the journey to 97-98 and the 97-98 season. I can't wait for those stars to align, you would assume, there in the NBA Finals against the Utah Jazz. And, you know, that should certainly be very good to see. You know, another thing last night was the 90s NBA jerseys would not be fashionable today. I mean, the Sonics jerseys,
awful.
Brutal. I forgot that they had the maroon phase, and those were hideous that the Supersonics were wearing in the NBA Finals against Jordan. So that was humorous to see. It was also funny to see MJ's reaction to Gary Payton.
That was funny.
You know, MJ watching Gary Payton's reaction on the iPad and basically saying, I didn't have a problem with the glove. Where actually, MJ, you did for a couple games there where Gary Payton was matched up with MJ, Gary Payton, the Defensive Player of the Year that year. So that was cool to see. You know, another takeaway, you mentioned the Steve Kerr fight, and just to kind of dive into that a little bit deeper, the attitude that he had with his teammates, the relationship that he had with his teammates, has been really interesting to see evolve throughout these episodes. You know, he didn't have Steve Kerr's number when he wanted to apologize for punching him in the face. Like, how do you not have your teammate's phone number? You know, okay, like,
well, I thought that too, but it's also, it was a different time. Like, I guess he had a cell phone, but cell phones weren't as prevalent. And so,
true.
You know, I don't know if he had like a black book is essentially what it was. I mean, where you write numbers down. I don't know if he had that.
But still,
it's a fair point. But,
and you know, Will Perdue was on Golic and Wingo this morning, and Will Perdue said that MJ called him Will Vanderbilt because he wasn't good enough to play basketball at Purdue.
Wow.
You know, just taking jabs at his different teammates, the Scott Burrell stuff, and trying to motivate Scott Burrell in practices. It's just been really fascinating to see MJ's relationship and sometimes a shaky relationship with his former teammates.
Well, you do wonder if he wasn't that way. And I thought the line at the end of episode 7 where he gets emotional and then he's like, all right, break. You know, that was MJ. Him saying that, you know, I don't have to do this, but if, and basically I'm paraphrasing that, if you, I play with this type of intensity, and if you don't, then okay. But this is how I am. This is what I do. And I don't necessarily fault him for it. Was he a jerk? Yeah, he was. I mean, he was at Will Perdue called him an a-hole. You know, I mean, he said that. He goes, mm-hmm. But everyone pretty much admitted, yeah, he was that way. But that's kind of what we needed. And we actually have what he said. This is the clip at the end of The Last Dance, Episode 7.
When people see this, they're going to say, well, he wasn't really a nice guy. He may have been a tyrant. Oh, well, that's you. Because you never wanted anything. I wanted to win, but I wanted them to win and be a part of that as well. I don't have to do this. I'm only doing it because it is who I am. That's how I played the game. That was my mentality. If you don't want to play that way, don't play that way.
Michael Jordan at the end of the Last Dance. Sorry, MJ.
Don't cut off MJ.
I know I did. I don't have a problem with it. I'm going to be honest with you. I really don't.
A problem with what?
With how he was. With him being that guy. With him being, you know, he's not there to be everybody's friend. He's there to win.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, don't you kind of have to be that way to be the GOAT?
Yes, you do. That's my point. Do you think Tom Brady is everybody's friend?
No.
Tom Brady's a jerk. Tom Brady's another word that I can't use. But he wins. And I think so much in society anymore, we want to be like, oh, they're just not a very nice guy. And Jordan even said before this documentary came out, people aren't going to like what they see about me because they're going to see a side that they didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true, but they won. If he's a nice guy, if he's everybody's friend, I don't think they win 6 NBA championships. I just don't.
No, you're. I think you're bang on with that. I think you can say a lot of the same things about LeBron James. I mean, there have been a lot of teammates of his past that didn't really like playing for him because he was an alpha, and to be the GOAT, to be that good at your craft and dominate in the fashion that MJ did in the '90s or LeBron has been doing for the last 15 years. Then you have to have that within you. You just do. Kobe had it.
Yep.
Kobe absolutely had it. So it's just been fascinating to see that side of MJ that we're referring to, and the fact that his teammates understood it, but they didn't always like it.
And to wrap this up real fast, Scottie Pippen was a leader. Don't get me wrong, but the clip of him quitting. of they showed that he quit at the end of that game because he was mad that they were giving the ball to Kukoc and taking it out of his hands. That right there was a prime example of, and Scotty will never say these words, but that was a prime example of why he was number two. He just doesn't do that.
Yeah, he couldn't quite handle the burden that MJ was handling all those years with Pippen. And, you know, one last quick thought. The amount of media in a short turnaround in 1993 for his retirement announcement, I was super impressed by.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, hats off to the late, great Craig Sager for pissing off Jerry Krause at the beginning. Way to go, Craig.
Yeah.
That was awesome. That was so fantastic, and good on him for asking the question. It is the Rundown talking The Last Dance, but when we come back, sports are back. A sport return, the UFC. We will discuss. I will give you my thoughts on the event because I watched it. Next on the Rundown, ESPN 105 The Game. Are you working from home? Stream us from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app, enable our Alexa skill or Google Home, and ask to play 105 The Game or live stream from our website, thegamenashville.com. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson here on the Rundown. And the city of Nashville starting the reopening, phase one today. So I saw signs when I was out everywhere yesterday driving around to pick up food. I went and picked up food for my mom for Mother's Day, and I saw signs in windows saying, we'll be open tomorrow, and given the hours and everything. So the phase one is underway, Ryan. We'll see how it goes.
Yes, and I hope that we don't jump back into this too quick.
I saw a picture from a place that I enjoy going to, Tin Roof 2 in Cool Springs, and I got to tell you, wasn't happy by it. There's like too many people in it. But
yeah, that picture, I believe, was taken Saturday night, and it looked like a normal Saturday night.
Yeah, just got to behave, people.
Pre-COVID. So, yeah, let's keep doing all the different things that we can, and do your part, stay apart, keep washing your hands, keep wearing the masks like they're asking everybody to, so that we don't have, you know, a second wind of this in the summer and have to go from phase two or three and take steps back. So
this weekend, Ryan, UFC 249, this was an event that was originally scheduled for April. It looked like it was going to happen then. ESPN, the major broadcast partner for the UFC, asked Dana White, their president, hey, can we hold off? Because that's when everything was happening and all the sports had postponed at that point. And so they weren't ready to rush back into it. So he did. And they ended up doing it on Saturday from Jacksonville in an empty arena. I watched it. I ordered it. I know Marquise did as well. I enjoyed it. It was nice to have live sports. I know that you're not a UFC fan, but and I wouldn't consider myself a huge UFC fan. I watch the sport. I know a little bit about it, but I'm not like a diehard. But it was nice to have something to watch Saturday night that was live. And this was even after Ronaldo Souza tested positive in the pre-fight screening for COVID-19. He was pulled from the event. His fight was canceled. Everybody else was fine, but that was a part of the system they had in place, and Dana White said the system worked. So they were able to find out that somebody had it, was not showing symptoms of it, and now he's getting the treatment and the help that he needs for it. But it looked like everything went off without a hitch.
Well, that's certainly good to hear. You're correct. I'm not a UFC guy. Did not watch it Saturday night. Did not pay the ESPN Plus fee to watch it. But, you know, certainly interested to hear what you, Chase, and you, Marquise, have to say about what that was like without fans and how that compared to a normal UFC fight card where you have all the bells and whistles, you have all the fans in the arena. What did you guys think?
I didn't notice, to be honest with you. With WWE, it's been very apparent that it's just weird that there aren't fans. Like, I've had a hard time adjusting to it. With the UFC, it didn't bother me. You didn't hear a crowd, but it really didn't bother me. And I don't know if that's because the shots were so tight that you couldn't, I mean, you're inside the octagon, so you usually don't see much of the crowd anyway, unless they do a wide shot. So it didn't bug me. They had the broadcasters spread out instead of sitting next to each other. Each of them had their own table around the octagon. Anyone that was working outside, you know, any of the crews for each of the fighters, they had masks on. Bruce Buffer, who's the octagon announcer, even had a mask on until he would talk. He would take it off each time he talked. So it felt relatively normal for me, even though I know it wasn't. They all did their entrances, and I thought it was funny. And Marquise, I can't remember who the fighter was, but it was on the prelims on ESPN, pulled a Caleb Joseph and walked out and is like waving and high-fiving the fans that aren't there. So, you know, that was pretty funny. But I enjoyed it, and it really didn't bug me that fans weren't there. It felt normal.
Yeah, I watched Ultimate Fighter a lot when it first came out, and it's pretty much like an episode of The Ultimate Fighter where you hear coaches and you hear the fight too. Like if there's a hard punch, you can hear it.
Yeah, now that was cool.
It's pretty brutal. But and then also you can hear the commentators, because Greg Hardy actually won his fight because of Daniel Cormier telling him to change his technique on certain things. So they can hear the commentators as well. And Greg Hardy said, I'm not gonna lie, that's what kind of helped me get the win. So I didn't really notice it, because it's just like I watched wrestling and without a crowd. And I think UFC gave me a little bit more hope, because I looked around and there was a lot of people still there. There was people, like I think there was a lot of journalists. There was like a media area to where each media member had their like own table and they were still working. And then you have, of course, the USC people. You had Dana White. And there was a lot of people there that they were able to get together, so it kind of gave me hope for other sports.
Yeah, and I think that the other sports needed to see this. And even though it's very easy to say, well, that's different. I mean, UFC and baseball or UFC and hockey, yeah, they're all different. I get that. But you can take the same ideas and apply it to your sports. And, you know, one thing that I brought up last week that is so difficult is, here in the States, we haven't had a model for how this could work. Well, now you do. You have the Korean Baseball League that I'm sure Major League Baseball has looked at. They're watching that intently of how it works for them. But now there's something on U.S. soil that now these commissioners can all get together. And they're all talking, by the way. Dana White has, I'm sure, has gotten a lot of phone calls over the course of the last day or so. They're all talking. And now they can ask questions of, okay, well, when the fighter tested positive, what was the protocol? What did you guys do? How are you going to change this? Are there things that you learn? I believe that this is a good sign for the other leagues and can help them return.
But will they take it, though? That's the question, because when you look at some of these commissioners, do they even like the fact what UFC and wrestling is doing at this point? Do they like how they're handling this situation? And some of them may not. Some of them don't even like the sport. They think the sport is barbaric. And, you know, a lot of people share that same sentiment. But I just think, like, look, regardless of how you feel about MMA and mixed martial arts fighting and boxing and how you feel about wrestling, sports entertainment, however you call it, they're doing it, and they're doing it correctly, and they're doing it without a hitch. So maybe you should, and you know, kind of put your differences aside and, you know, yeah, the sport's still going to be barbaric, but take advice from what they're doing, because they're doing it right.
Guess what Dana White and the UFC did this weekend? They made a whole lot of money.
A whole lot.
That's what they did, and that's what the other sports need.
And eyes on the product.
I don't know how much of this, and this is more of a question than a critique, but I don't really know how much of this can truly be a sample for, say, Major League Baseball or National Hockey League in their quest to return to action, because different sports, different amount of people involved within those sports. You know, you have a one-on-one fight, and yes, you have the coaches and the commentators, and you have other people than just the two people in the octagon that are within the arena, but it's a much bigger number, and you can limit it to a certain amount of fighters. But if you're having a 24 team playoff, you have 24 teams times 20 players plus all those coaches plus all those staff members. You know, it's a lot bigger of a hurdle for those leagues than than UFC.
But see, that's why I never thought that you can do it like all this in one central location. It's going to have to be multiple locations. It can't just be, okay, yeah, we're just going to get 16 NBA teams and we're going to ship them off to Orlando. Like, it can't be that way. It's got to be separate locations on both ends.
What I think is going to happen, guys, is in one of the latest MLB plans, and I think we're supposed to possibly get another one this week, had them playing in their home stadiums. That's probably what's going to have to happen. Is you're going to just have to, you can't do central sites or things like that. You're going to have to use your home building or a home base, have a home base, and then maybe realign to limit the travel and all of that stuff. But I think that's the only way it's going to really work, is doing it that way.
To me, the biggest takeaway is the fact that they had a fighter test positive and they went forward with it. And
yes,
that is where the other leagues, in my opinion, the biggest takeaway that the other leagues can take is that the UFC did this. And if they did it the right way in terms of, you know, keeping that fighter quarantined and, you know, they had tests that, you know, a big issue with sports returning is the amount of testing that can be done. So if Gary Bettman and Adam Silver and, you know, these leagues can pick the brain of Dana White and see how this, you know, continues forward, we have to see what happens with these fighters. If a couple more of them test positive here in the next couple weeks, then I think they have bigger issues. But if leagues were to shut down like the NBA did when Rudy Gobert tested positive because one player tested positive, then I don't think you're going to complete any sort of season or postseason before, you know, spring of 2021, if I'm being realistic about this.
Well, and you're right, but that's the whole point in this exercise, in my opinion, is we have to see – you have to go in with the assumption of, okay, somebody's going to get this, somebody's going to test positive. That's just the unfortunate truth. I'm being as realistic as I possibly can. And so you have to go into it thinking that way, but then have a system in place that is going to work. And we may not have discovered if that system works. Right now on the surface, it looks like it worked for UFC. But as you just said, if all of a sudden three or four fighters, it comes out in the next week or so that now they have it, okay, it didn't work. That's a problem.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be fighters. It could be other staff members that were associated with UFC 249.
Yeah, so I think that this is all, but at the same time, and again, being as realistic as possible, to learn this, you kind of have to go through trial and error. And
no, you're right.
All of these people were willing to do that. And they had a system in place. So far, it appears that it worked. NASCAR is up next. NASCAR is going to start this weekend. Again, different situation. You don't have to have as many people, but it's still a sport, and you still have to go through some sort of protocol. So I'm just wondering how much, and it's really, to me, the two big ones that are on the clock are the NHL and the NBA, because we should be in the middle of their playoffs, or at least the NHL's playoffs right now, and starting the NBA. That's the problem. Baseball still has a little wiggle room. MLS still has a little wiggle room. Obviously, the NFL hasn't started yet. So I think the NHL and the NBA, they are on the clock, so they need to have a plan, in my opinion, very, very soon, possibly this week. We need to know something. That's just kind of how I think. But when we come back, Ryan, there is one prominent NBA figure that says it's time just to scrap it. It's time to just focus on next year and forget about this year. We will tell you who that is and what that person said when we come back here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Many local businesses in Middle Tennessee are still open. Many are reopening today and ready to serve you during this uncertain time. Help them out by visiting rocknashville.com for delivery, pickup options, fitness ideas, virtual entertainment, and more. We got this, Nashville. Support your local businesses. Welcome back into The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McKay, Ryan Porth, and Marquise Munson, who is pulling from the Last Dance playlist, and I love it, on Spotify.
Greatest soundtrack of all time.
Awesome. It has been fantastic.
Man, I actually work out to the Last Dance playlist now.
Yeah, it's been good. We get a lot of good stuff on that. So, Ryan, a prominent NBA figure has come out and said, we needed to scrap this season. And that person is Shaquille O'Neal. Shaq says there'll be a giant asterisk next to whoever wins the championship And at this point, it's just time to focus on next year. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's a lot easier said than done, especially in Shaq's shoes where he's not playing anymore. And he's also...
He's getting them general checks.
Well, but he's also not a part of the league front office that would be losing millions, if not billions of dollars by just scrapping the rest of their season. Sitting here on May 11th, neither the NBA nor the NHL can do that. Now, if we're sitting here on June 11th and there's still a lot of questions like we're having today with these leagues, then I think that's more of a discussion. But sitting here in early May, no. That these leagues cannot afford to do that. And, you know, to the point of Shaq saying that whoever would win, there would be an asterisk next to it. Look, none of this is going to be normal for any of the leagues. Major League Baseball, National Hockey League, NBA. We might be saying that about the National Football League or college football at some point in the early fall, that this doesn't feel normal, especially without fans. So at the same time, I don't know if you can call it illegitimate, which is is kind of what Shaq is inferring with those comments, that it wouldn't feel legitimate that, you know, let's say LeBron's Lakers win the NBA title, or, you know, the St. Louis Blues or the Washington Capitals win the Stanley Cup. I don't think it's illegitimate if that happens. It just wouldn't feel normal.
Sure. And we always we hear asterisk. Oh, that championship has an asterisk, and it's immediately a negative. And sometimes it is. Most of the time, I guess it is. But, yeah, the Stanley Cup champion or the NBA champion, no matter what, they could start back tomorrow. There's going to be a footnote that says season was delayed 2 months or was postponed 2 months due to COVID-19 outbreak. Okay. I mean, that doesn't have anything to do with the team that eventually wins the championship. It's not like, well, player was suspended for performance enhancing drugs or something like that. I mean, this is what it is right now. So to say it's illegitimate, I disagree with that.
Now, to play devil's advocate, let's say the NHL or the NBA, they expand their postseason. This would happen more likely in the NHL.
Yep.
If the 20th team, the 20th best team at the time of the season pause, ends up winning the Stanley Cup, would you then call that illegitimate because that team had to have an expanded playoff to even be included in the playoff, and then they got on a roll once the season resumed?
There is more of an argument there. Now, that I understand. That you do have to say, format was changed due to COVID-19 outbreak, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and then the Florida Panthers win the Stanley Cup.
Right. And you know what? If that happens, people are going to be pissed, except for the three Florida Panthers fans that they have. But most people are going to be upset about that because they're going to look at it as, hell yeah, it's illegitimate. I mean, they didn't deserve to be in. The only reason they were in is because they couldn't finish the season. So that I get. This is what Shaq actually said. I think we should scrap the season. Everybody go home, get healthy, come back next year. Just scrap the season. Just scrap it. To try and come back now and do a rush playoffs as a player, any team that wins this year, there's an asterisk. They're not going to get the respect. What if a team that's not really in the mix of things all of a sudden wins with a new playoff format? Nobody's going to respect that. So scrap it. Worry about the safety of the fans and the people. Come back next year. Look, I understand how players are feeling. I really do. But any team that gets it done this year, there's going to be an asterisk on that championship. Shaquille O'Neal. He told that to For the Win in an interview.
And maybe these leagues are delaying the inevitable. Maybe the NBA, maybe the NHL are delaying the inevitable, that they're going to have to scrap their season. You know, I remember hosting Preds Insiders. It was like 3 weeks ago when I had Emily Kaplan on from ESPN, and she was like, I don't even know why we're going through this song and dance. It feels like it's inevitable that the season is going to just get scrapped as a whole, and the start of next season is in doubt because there are way too many questions that have to be figured out that you may not have enough time to figure them out before you have to make a decision on whether or not to resume the season or go straight to the playoffs. So maybe they are. Hopefully they're not. Fingers crossed that these leagues can figure it out here in the next month, and by July 4th we can have some sports, whether it's baseball, basketball, hockey, or all three of them, soccer as well. But I kind of understand what Shaq is saying in terms of just scrap it, because it could be the inevitable. We just don't know. But to say that there's going to be an asterisk on the championship, there's an asterisk on basically everything.
Yeah, that's just silly. That's a silly argument.
With the lockout shortened season, let's take the 2013 Chicago Blackhawks. Like, they didn't play a full 82 games schedule before going on their playoff run and winning a Stanley Cup. Do you look on that postseason any differently? I mean, it's not apples to apples, but that wasn't normal that they had to play a 48-game season and then, a postseason. But we don't look back on the 2013 Blackhawks or the 2013 Bruins that got beat by the Blackhawks and say, oh, well, their success in the postseason was illegitimate because of a shortened season. We don't say that. So, it's going to feel a lot different than that, though, because fans aren't going to be in the stands. There could be different hubs that they're playing at. Just completely different circumstances.
I'll use this as an example, too. In 2011, when the NBA had their lockout, the Miami Heat won that year. So are we going to take a championship from LeBron James, who beat the Thunder 4-1 in a series, all because they had a lockout season? Now, their season just started like a month later. But are we going to take away that championship from LeBron? No, we
no.
still mention the
no,
fact
I forgot
that,
about it.
Yeah, we still mention. Yeah, we still mention the fact that he has X amount of championships with Miami, and we don't even remember that. That was a lockout season that year, and the season started a month later. So, like, if we start the playoffs right now in the NBA, every team that was going to make the playoffs at the end of the season was going to make the playoffs. So just, the Memphis Grizzlies, that race for eight is the only race that was worth, because the Blazers, the Pelicans were up there as well. The Spurs were starting to climb back up there. So that's the only argument you can make out of that. In the Eastern Conference, it's pretty set in stone. Like, the Wizards, they were awful. They're six games behind the eighth spot. So if you start the season of the playoffs now, the teams that were going to make the playoffs at the end of the season, they were going to make the playoffs regardless. So it's just, it's ridiculous. Like, yeah, just play the championships, and it doesn't matter about an asterisk, because guess what? 5-10 years from now, we won't even remember it.
You know why the NH... Go ahead.
No, because I was going to say, because we don't remember 2011.
Exactly.
So.
We'll remember this, though.
Sure. For different reasons.
I see what you're saying, Marquise, though. I do. But we will forever remember, however sports return in its full capacity with these leagues that we're discussing, we will forever remember it. And I think a big reason for it is the fact that there won't be fans. And that's going to be a huge, huge part of it, because it's not going to feel normal. I mean, Chase Matusheyne came on this very program a couple weeks ago and said that playing without fans is nothing that they've ever dreamed of in the NHL as a hockey player. They don't want to win a Stanley Cup in front of no fans,
but they're going to do it.
If the NHL comes back, someone is going to win a Stanley Cup without fans in the building. And yes, it's going to feel weird, but they will have won it, as long as it's not, a single elimination tournament that is completely different from the normal playoff format.
They're going to, I believe the NHL is going to come back, especially. Here's why. What did NBC think they were going to have this summer, and now they don't?
The Olympics.
Right. So NBC is going to push this, because they're like, hey, we got the time. We have the space. We can put you on NBC Sports Network, CNBC, BNBC, ANBC, whatever we got. We'll if we don't have it, we'll make it. We'll create it. We got the time.
ANBC, what does that stand for?
I don't know. I just made that up. But you see my point. Like, they are like,
Golf
hey,
Channel.
We need programming. Yeah, Golf Channel. They're going to have stuff on Golf Channel. But they can put it on, and I believe that that's going to happen. And I feel like ESPN, ABC is going to look at it the same way with the NBA of, guys, we just moved up the Jordan dock. That was our plan for June. We don't have that now. Nobody cares about the ESPYs, so we need something. Man, we need something going on this summer. So I respect Shaq. I think he's wrong. I do believe that no matter what, it's going to happen. It's going to have an asterisk. It's going to be different, but if they can get back because of the money, they're going to. Now, do I believe they need to go ahead and make a decision like soon, maybe even this week? Yes. I think it's time to – because you have to
make a decision this week on the whole season?
I think they're close to it, yeah. I mean, because even if they come out – let's say they come out Friday and they say, hey, we're the NBA, we're coming back. You need at least 3 weeks to get ready. Same with the NHL, probably 3 weeks to a month to get ready to come back. I mean, it's not like it's going to just happen. You have to have preparation time.
Well, no, but you can make that decision in early June because these leagues are preparing like there could be action in July, and that's a good enough time frame. You don't have to decide this week.
I would just like them to. But
we would all like them to, and we would all like them to decide this week that they're coming back.
It's got to happen soon. The window's closing. I will say that. Yeah, I do think it's got to happen soon.
And look, I understand, like, you know, everybody wants to win a championship in front of their home fans or wherever. But I'm pretty sure Justin, when he won the UFC championship, I'm pretty sure he didn't imagine he'd beat Tony Ferguson and no fans. I'm pretty sure Drew McIntyre in wrestling finally main eventing WrestleMania after 10 years of working hard to get here, and all of a sudden he's doing it in front of no fans. It's the norm of what's going on right now. I'd much rather win the championship than to just not crown a champion at all. So that's kind of have to be their mindset of, look, it's either no championship at all, so all these close to 82 games that you played is going to mean nothing if you don't even attempt to win a championship. So I think they just go for it, try to go for the championship, and then we'll figure it out from there as far as next season's concerned.
Hey, this is the first time in history that the question – talk about your mindset or statement actually could play into something. I'm just saying, because the mindset of these players is going to be quite different if they're playing in an expanded playoff or without fans. So we will see. I think they're going to make a decision soon.
I think we'll know by June 11th, but we won't know this week.
Okay, June 11th. I'm going to write that down. That is your over-under, and you're saying around then. So we will document that. When we come back, Ryan, the Vols have had a huge weekend, plus ESPN looks like they have somewhat of a plan in place for one of their premier programs. We'll discuss that on the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson. So it was a big weekend for Vol football, Ryan. They continue to tear up the recruiting trail. And I'm going to admit this, I don't pay attention to recruiting all that much. I mean, I glance at it, but it's just, I know a lot of people get just involved and entrenched in it. I don't, because I don't care what a guy did in high school. I want to see what they're going to do in college. I mean, that's my opinion, but I know that this is a good thing for Vols football and Jeremy Pruitt. I want to see it pan out and what it looks like, but is this yet just another sign of, okay, Jeremy Pruitt's getting the job done. They're starting to bring Vol football back to where it needs to be. Maybe Philip Fulmer has a ton to do with this too, but what are your thoughts on the weekend that they've had?
I mean, the fact that they brought in three more 4-stars, and they are, like you said, they are tearing it up on the recruiting trail, I think is a positive sign, but Butch Jones also tore it up on the recruiting trail. So at the end of the day, it's up to Jeremy Pruitt and his staff to coach these guys up and not just try to let the talent win alone. And you know, on Saturdays, actually do something instead of relying on these college kids to figure it out themselves. I mean, yeah, at the end of the day, it's up to Pruitt.
Right. But I will say this. You mentioned Butch Jones, and Butch Jones tore it up on the recruiting trail too. I do put a lot of stock into the fact that Jeremy Pruitt, who at times we've seen, whoa. I mean, some of the decisions – some of the losses, you get nervous. I mean, I was ready to write the guy off after three games last season. I do believe that it is huge for him to have Philip Fulmer just down the hall, because I think there is a lot of discussion taking place. I think Philip Fulmer has his hands all over that football team. That was the plan from the very beginning. Now, is he starting to back off a little bit that Jeremy Pruitt is proving himself? I hope so. I hope that's a part of his mindset and his thought process, but I think it's very important that Phil is involved.
Sure, and look, you may not pay attention to recruiting rankings all that much. I may not pay attention to recruiting rankings all that much, but at the end of the day, they do matter. I mean,
of course they do.
When
you're right.
When you're consistently in the top 5 or 10, you're consistently going to be competing for a place in the college football playoff. You just are. That has been evident here in the last 5-10 years, that if your recruiting rankings are very good year in, year out, you're going to be there year in and year out. And this is the first big year for Jeremy Pruitt on the recruiting front. Last year was, or this year technically, the 2020 class was a nice step in the right direction, but the 2021 class is shaping up to be, at least right now, a potential top 5 class in the nation, which if he can double down on it in the 2022 class and get another top 5 or 10 class, then you're talking about a team that could compete for an SEC East title. But I'll go back to what I said. At the end of the day, it is up to Jeremy Pruitt on game day and practice days to coach these guys up and actually maximize their potential and not have half of these recruiting classes either flunk out or get busted with some sort of, off the field mess, or in the transfer portal. Like he's got him now do the other half of the work. Recruiting is half the battle. Now the other half is actually coaching these guys up and making them good football players in the SEC.
Yep, and that's going to be what we have to see happen here in the near future. So ESPN, it has come out that Monday Night Football is going to look different this year. Joe Tess, Booger McFarland are going to be out. They will remain with ESPN. Just put them back with college. That's where they belong. They did a fine job doing that. So there's going to be a new Monday Night Football booth. I have seen possibility of doing a rotating booth for this year, which tells me what I think is going to happen probably happens. Starting,
which is what?
I believe that Kevin Burkhardt is going to be the voice of Monday Night Football after his contract is up with Fox this year. I think they're going to go hard after him. They're going to pay him a lot of money to bring him in and make him one of their top NFL guys and make him the voice of Monday Night Football. That's what I think is going
to
happen.
I think that would be a shrewd move by ESPN to get Kevin Burkhardt.
Oh, it'd be huge. And I know we're up against and running out of time, but if we could name our dream Monday Night Football booth, who would be in it? And you can go fantasy or you can go realistic, however you want to take it.
Well, I haven't given that one much thought in terms of just all time.
No, I'm talking about if you're making the decision, like mm-hmm. if you any candidate that is currently available to you, whether it's internal or external from ESPN, what does your booth look like? And I know there are going to be some, like, to me, if you have Peyton Manning as the color analyst, I'm sorry, I just don't think that's going to happen. They've tried. If it was going to happen, it would have already.
Maybe years down the road, Peyton Manning will seriously consider that role. But, you know, they lost a good one in Tirico.
Yep.
You know, that if they could have held on to Tirico, he would have continued as the Monday night guy and maybe even grown into a bigger role with ESPN. But it's evident that when Al Michaels steps away at some point, he'll be the Sunday night football guy on NBC. I saw a report that Steve Levy and Dan Orlovsky could be the combo this year.
And I don't hate that. I don't hate it. It's safe.
If Steve Levy is the bridge to Kevin Burkhardt and then it's Kevin Burkhardt and Dan Orlovsky, I can be on board with that.
Yeah. And here's the other thing. I would have, if you have Orlovsky, I would at least play with the idea of having Pat McAfee in there, either on the field or as the third analyst in the booth. I would experiment with the idea because I think he's entertaining, but that's just me.
He's definitely entertaining, but he's not for everybody.
Yeah, and that's very, very true. That's going to do it for this edition of The Rundown. Vince Ferrara, WNML, the sports animal in Knoxville, coming up on Darren Donick and Chase today at noon. He will talk more about the Vols recruiting, so be sure to tune in for that. That's going to do it for us, though. Darren Donick and Chase next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.